unacceptable that we've become so accustomed to people being passed out on sidewalks that for 10 hours, no one called.
A spike in Anchorage hospitalizations from the drug spice. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, August 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Commandant of the Coast Guard predicts more resources for the Arctic.
I am optimistic that on my watch, we will see no fooling forward progress as we look at building a national fleet of icebreakers.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
32 people have been hospitalized in Anchorage in the past week because of spice, a street drug that's a mixture of dried herbs sprayed with chemicals. Many of the victims were smoking the drug near Bean's Cafe in the downtown area on Wednesday. It's unclear if spice is linked to the 7 deaths in the homeless community in the past month. From the Urban Affairs Desk, KSKA's Ann Hillman learned more.
The executive director of Bean's Cafe, Lisa Souter, describes the scene near the soup kitchen on Wednesday as a war zone. Bean's Cafe staff wandered the campus, checking on anyone who was lying down. Some were just lounging in the sun, but others were unconscious.
And what would typically happen is that there'd be maybe 2, 3, 4 people would be smoking it together, and they would also come to symptoms at the same time. So you would have 3 or 4 people down, and then you'd have, okay, it seems okay, everything seems stable. And you'd have 3 or 4 people down again.
Police and paramedics responded. Souter says one of her staff members pried a rolled-up cigarette made with a synthetic drug out of the hand of one of the clients as she was being loaded into the ambulance. She says her staff is seeing an increase in the number of people transported for seizures and cardiac arrests, both side effects of the illegal drug. According to an APD press release, it's possible other chemicals and hemlock-like plants are being added to the drug locally. The health problems from spice usage are not definitively linked to the 7 members of the homeless community who have died in the past 3 weeks. The Anchorage Police Department says toxicology results usually take about 8 weeks. Bean's Cafe has hosted 2 different memorial events to help the grieving community. During the first of the events, Mark Roy of Aconis listened to his brother drum while others sang. He said the deaths were a wake-up call.
And reading it in the newspaper, it opened up my eyes, too. And that kind of scares me. So,
how did it open up your eyes?
Making me want to, you know, stop trying to drink so much, you know, and doing drugs, you know, and try and sober up. Try and find work and get a place to live in.
Souter says connecting clients with a limited number of resources isn't always easy.
The problem is now if somebody walks into our client services office and says, that's it, I'm done with drugs, I want to go into detox, I want to go into rehab. We go, great, hopefully we can get you a bed maybe in October. That doesn't work. You know, we've got to be utilizing the few scant resources we have while we're trying to bring more online.
One temporary solution is a simple real-time updated document shared by local service providers showing all available detox, rehab, and housing possibilities. Souter says it will help make sure all resources are put into use as quickly as possible. But she says ensuring that everyone is safe will require the whole community.
If you see someone on the sidewalk, passed out, you don't need to approach them. But call 911 and have somebody check on them. You know, one of the clients that was found had been on the street for probably 10 to 12 hours. That's unacceptable. It's unacceptable that we've become so accustomed to people being passed out on sidewalks that for 10 hours, no one called.
The Anchorage Police Department is looking for the source of the drug. Selling and possessing spice in Anchorage is illegal. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
The Obama administration has freed up money in Alaska to close a funding gap in health care for veterans. But as KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, it isn't a silver bullet for difficulties Alaska's vets have faced over the last few months in connecting with care.
Sean Bransky is the Interim Associate Director for Veterans Affairs in Alaska. He says the Choice Improvement Act, signed by the president last week, lets Alaska shift about $20 million between programs in order to restore services that have slowed in recent months.
Essentially what it did here in Alaska is it gave us the flexibility to get that money moved over from the Choice Act to our non-VA care coordination funds to continue to provide care for veterans here in Alaska through the end of this fiscal year, 30 September.
That funding shortfall came in part because of national changes to how the VA pays outside providers for health care. The Choice Act passed a year ago and is credited with reducing wait times, but also proved far more expensive than anticipated. In Alaska, which served as the model for VA reforms, the program backfired, extending wait times and suddenly making routine care more complicated. Before VA funding was turned off 8 weeks ago to rein in budget overages, Alaskan veterans were already having difficulty with the third-party company, TriWest, handling care under the Choice program. Verdi Bowen is the director for the state's Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and says that especially for veterans in areas around Kenai, the Matsu Valley, Fairbanks, and Juneau, everything got harder.
And if someone was at one of those clinics and they needed, say, like a radiology appointment, when the funding was pulled, they had to go to the Veterans Choice Card, which added another layer that they had to go through. Prior to that, the VA would help them make the appointment, set the appointment, and it would be done pretty quick.
Bowen says that while $20 million in restored funding will help paying for faster care, the complicated mix of national, state, and local programs isn't always as nimble as patients and providers need it to be.
There's still some sorting to do as they bring that funding back into the purchase care programs. And it would be fair to say that the local VA is probably doing a stellar job trying to sort that money back out, but it would be difficult for them to turn it on back overnight. They're going to have to try and work out those issues with each one of those veterans that are in that care system.
The Alaska VA also has a new interim director, Dr. Linda Boyle, a 25-year veteran of the Air Force. And next week, the nation's Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Robert McDonald, will be in Alaska. He's scheduled to attend meetings in Wasilla, Kotzebue, and Point Hope. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The head of the U.S. Coast Guard says lawmakers and the national security staff are waking up to the need for more icebreakers as the Arctic opens to increased ship traffic.
This is really generating a lot of interest, and I am optimistic that on my watch, we will see no fooling forward progress as we look at building a national fleet of icebreakers.
Admiral Paul Zukump spoke at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. this week. The commandant says he's had a peek at bills pending in Congress that will detail how his service will fare in its campaign to modernize.
I can't share those with you. But it may very well bring the largest acquisition budget to the Coast Guard in Coast Guard history.
That optimism stands in contrast to an assessment a few months ago by the Government Accountability Office. The GAO says the list of ships and airplanes the Coast Guard says it needs is unaffordable. The report also says one upcoming project, the construction of 25 offshore patrol cutters, is expected to consume two-thirds of the Coast Guard acquisition budget until 2032. Zukump, in his speech to the press club, also discussed the lack of modern charting in the Arctic and said the Coast Guard is considering a traffic separation plan for the Bering Strait to prevent collisions. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a fermented foods evangelist visits Homer.
He describes it as a community of organisms. You kind of have to go on the fact that it tastes good and that it's a great mystery.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Alaska Marine Conservation Council reminds Alaskans to choose local, sustainably caught seafood this summer. More information at akmarine.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Marine Conservation Council.
Talkeetna's Matsuburo transfer site, often referred to by locals as the dump, is not the sort of place you would normally expect to find a celebration. But that's exactly what happened on Monday when the community's first recycling container was brought online. KTNA's Philip Manning has more.
As the first aluminum cans were tossed into Talkeetna's new recycling container, there was an air of celebration. Many Talkeetna residents have been waiting decades for a local, regular, reliable recycling solution. On Monday, that became a reality. A major factor that makes this iteration of recycling in Talkeetna different than previous attempts is borough involvement. Borough contractors will pick up the recycling container just like any other dumpster at the transfer site. Instead of taking it to the landfill, however, the contents will go to the Valley Community for Recycling Solutions facility. Butch Shapiro, the borough's solid waste manager, says that there's an economic incentive for his department in diverting recyclables away from the landfill.
That's the big thing for us. The more we can keep out of there, the more we can save, the longer we can make a cell last. And that's huge because it costs about between $3.5 to $5 million to build a landfill cell.
Shapiro estimates that the Matsuburo saves about 25 cents for every pound of material that's recycled instead of being dumped in the landfill. He says the current program, which includes plans for recycling in Talkeetna, Willow, and Big Lake, could save the borough $100,000 in the next year. He says adding more recycling communities would increase those savings over time. While the borough is handling the transport of the recycling container, the community had to come up with the funding for it. The final cost to refurbish a retired trash container and make it suitable for recycling is between $8,000 and $10,000. But Shapiro says a new container with similar capabilities could cost three times as much.
Quite a savings there, you know, and it really brings it within the realm of possibility. So it's been a long time coming.
The Talkeetna Recycling Committee had little difficulty raising the needed funds in short order. Grants for $10,000 each from the Matsu Health Foundation and Matanuska Electric Association, as well as local fundraisers and donations, meant that the committee was able to bring the first container online this week, with a second already undergoing refurbishing. Talkeetna resident Katie Ryder organized much of that fundraising. On Monday, she told the gathered crowd of more than 30 people why she took the leadership role for the project.
I'm really honored to fill those shoes because the earth is the most important thing to me. And being here in Alaska, we need to be able to honor the earth and take care of our trash in a better way.
Molly Boyer is the executive director for the Valley Community for Recycling Solutions in Palmer. She says VCRS was founded with the initial goal of establishing reliable recycling options in the valley. Now, she says the establishment of recycling programs in individual communities helps her organization move toward its long-term goals.
To provide a permanent recycling facility and opportunity for the Matsu. And what you're seeing now, ultimately, these bins, this bin here, represents the fulfillment of that long-term goal.
The container is not the end of the story, however. The Talkeetna Recycling Committee is actively seeking volunteers to help guide local residents in what can be recycled and how it should be prepared. For the moment, aluminum cans, steel cans, and number two plastic jugs, such as milk jugs, are accepted. In Talkeetna, I'm Philip Manning.
A new recycling center also opened in Anchorage this week. People can now drop off their recyclables, including glass, for free at the Central Transfer Station in Midtown. The municipal-run facility allows people to dispose of hazardous waste, trash, and recyclables all at one location. With funding from the Alaska Energy Authority, a series of regional energy plans are in the works to help individuals and communities become more energy efficient. The Chugach Regional Energy Plan is being developed for the Prince William Sound region. KCHU's Marsha Lynn has more.
Attendance at Tuesday's meeting was slim, but the City of Valdez and other key organizations were well represented. Project Specialist Jackie Schaefer says that's important.
As long as we get a broad range of community leaders in the room that could kind of look at the broad perspective of energy, which includes all those components, housing, landfill, power production, renewables, transportation, then we get a clearer picture of the needs of the community from that perspective.
The Prince William Sound Economic District is the project contractor, and the idea is to get accurate and up-to-date information from towns within each region, says Jed Drolet from the Alaska Energy Authority.
What we had in this meeting is really what we are going for here. We're compiling this information mostly from secondary sources, and a lot of the reason for this outreach effort is to vet that information with communities and getting people like we had in this meeting that have really good detailed information about the communities.
At Tuesday's meeting, the plan outline was discussed. Folks pointed out several inaccuracies and offered contact information on how to get them corrected. The presenters say they learned a lot, adding that there are many similarities among places they visited.
You think that a road system community would be far greater established and maybe not have the high energy costs, but we hear the same types of conversation. You know, you have a refinery, yet you're paying these high fuel costs. How could that happen? What it does is allow us from that local perspective to really see the community through your eyes, not through the eyes of the state or the eyes of the Fed. Take that information and create a regional kind of a snapshot of the communities within that region.
Valdez does have a lot of the same challenges as many other communities we work in, even though it has a lot of differences and a lot of advantages in terms of being on the road system and having more of a commercial and industrial base. You still have the really high energy costs, and that's what we see, you know, in all the regions we work in.
The two have been on the road a lot.
So last week we traveled to Tsitsitlik, Chinega, and Whittier, and had great meetings and great weather. So Prince William Sound has proven to be fabulous to us during this trip.
Drolet says people in the smaller Prince William Sound communities showed up in force.
We were really happy in general with how much engagement we got, especially in the smaller communities where, you know, people who were attending our meeting were a pretty substantial fraction of the overall population of those communities. It really showed really great engagement and really great discussion.
The two will hold a community outreach meeting in Cordova Wednesday. In Valdez, I'm Marsha Lynn.
The deadline for proposals to supply the state lead interior energy project with natural gas was Monday. The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority is managing the project, and ADA spokesman Karsten Rodvik says the state corporation is considering a range of possibilities for getting affordable gas to the interior.
And these options that we're looking at, of course, include both Cook Inlet and North Slope LNG, and in-state propane or imported propane, and a small diameter pipeline as well. So everything is on the table.
In a release, ADA says all non-confidential information will be made available after a project partner is recommended to the ADA board.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek, it makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
A fermentation specialist stopped in Homer this week. He's making his way up Alaska, teaching about the crossover among food preservation, microbiology, and community. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver stopped by his workshop on a local farm and has more.
It's a sunny day over the Caribou Hills. A group of more than 50 people are milling around a large green farm, lunch plates piled high with pungent food that saturates the summer breeze. Sandor Katz is sitting on a log near some chickens, wearing a white shirt with a pattern of bright red radishes. He's the king of fermentation.
I, you know, ended up being given the nickname Sandor Kraut because I was always showing up with sauerkraut and, you know, evangelizing about the healing powers of sauerkraut.
Yes, sauerkraut.
You know, you can make it in dazzlingly bright colors or contrasting colors or, you know, different sizes and shapes.
Despite the teasing for always being that guy, you know, the one who brings fermented food to a dinner party, he truly has a deep passion for this process. Through his eyes, the complex world of microorganisms and bacteria at work take on new and beautiful life.
Before I see anything, like I smell this delicious sourness, I taste this sourness that speaks to me in a very deep way. What I see is, last season's garden that's still feeding us and nourishing us. And it's actually never occurred to me that sauerkraut would be ugly.
And his art is gaining popularity. In the pushback against processed and packaged foods, do-it-yourself preservation methods are picking up steam.
You know, after a couple of generations of, you know, being thrilled to outsource that and enjoy the convenience of one-stop shopping, a lot of people are waking up to the fact that, you know, a lot has been lost.
The older traditions kind of stick around more and are more appreciated by people in those areas.
Charles Meredith, who goes by Chaz, is an active part of the local farmers market, an independent growing community. He says he's seen a resurgence of traditional food ways like canning, pickling, dehydrating, and now fermenting.
So I think it's partially, you know, holding on to the past where you can obviously see it slipping away. And also fermentation and things like that are more practical, like you were saying, using it as a means of preservation, you know, in a place where you can only grow vegetables for, you know, a third of the year. It's nice to have a way to have him stick around.
Like many other people here, he's comfortable with lots of types of food preparation and, of course, has tasted pickles and sauerkraut. But still, there's something strangely unfamiliar about fermentation.
I like sort of the mystery of it.
That's Mary Lou Kelsey, whose lunch plate of sauerkraut and kimchi and seaweed is slowly blending together.
I was somebody who asked him, like, how do you know what organisms are in there? And if you were really worried about trying to identify all the organisms, then it would be difficult because he describes it as a community of organisms. And so you kind of have to go on the fact that tastes good and that it's a great mystery.
You know, when we're thinking about fermentation in a practical way, you know, we're thinking about communities because that's how the microorganisms exist. It's not singularly, but in communities.
And that's kind of like the people who are once again taking an interest in these complex processes.
You know, if you think of like the baker and the cheese maker and the sauerkraut maker as some, you know, archetypal fermenters, and we can't forget the beer makers, then these are all, you know, sort of products that give rise to exchange and informal barter and the sort of like economies of communities. So, you know, I think the revival of local food systems, you know, is all about, you know, building and strengthening community ties.
It can be seen in his own work. He brings people with common interests together, eating communal meals, trading containers of their homemade concoctions, all through his teaching of the art of fermentation. One jar of sauerkraut at a time. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
With Never Alone, Cook Inlet Tribal Council and game developers combined indigenous storytelling with video gaming in a way that appealed to mass markets. Its success has led to the follow-up Fox Tales, released last week. As KTOO's Lisa Fu reports, Juno writer Ishmael Hope relied on his uncles, Alaska Native elders from Kotzebue, to write the game's narrative.
Willie Goodwin Jr. narrates the video game Fox Tales. In Inupiaq, he tells the story of two friends who emerge from their sod homes after a long winter. At springtime, Goodwin says, everything comes alive. Goodwin is an elder from Kotzebue. He's also the uncle of Ishmael Hope, the game's writer. Hope says the two friends, Nuna and Fox, start chasing a little mouse.
And then suddenly, in the middle of the chase, they're stranded out in the ocean. And so they find themselves in an old umiak, a boat. They're just out, and then they have to navigate their way all the way through.
In Nuna and Fox's journey,
they get a little too exuberant, like young people will. They'll make little mistakes, but then they have to learn a lesson about how to respect all things. The values of being Inuit, Inupiaq, it's something that they had to learn.
Fox Tales is based on a story told by Hope's late grandfather, Willie Punnick Goodwin. It's a story about fighting a giant mouse. Goodwin told the story, the two Coastal brothers, during an archaeological trip with a team of scholars, including Wani Anderson, who transcribed it in a short story collection. Hope used a lot of his grandfather's direct words when writing the game's script. He also collaborated extensively with his uncles who live in Kotzebue, where Fox Tales begins. The game, like its predecessor, Never Alone, is narrated in Inupiaq with English subtitles.
Even if people are, they're absorbed in the game, they're playing the game, but there's something really special about the elder's voice, them speaking in the language. So even if you're not following everything, you're getting a sense of that world and that spirit.
Hope says it's that spirit that gives identity. Hope is Inupiaq and Tlingit. He says his uncles, Elmer Goodwin, Willie Goodwin Jr., and John Goodwin, taught him a lot about Inupiaq culture. Hope says working with them was key to making Foxtales.
They know how to hunt, they know how to fish, they know how to be in the land. They have so many stories of survival, of reading the landscape, observing the landscape, sensing the spirit and the life of everything around us. And so they have that knowledge, and they were able to impart that a little bit with us.
Fox Tales is a celebration of Inupiaq culture, something Hope thinks young people playing the game need.
It's one instance where they get a positive image of themselves reflected back on them. And when you're in pop culture and you have almost no images, or it's all horrible stereotype, it's really nice to kind of break through just a little bit.
Video games have been seen as separating the young generation from the old, but Hope wants Fox Tales to do the opposite.
For young people everywhere, it allows them to create the bridge to their mom and their dad and their uncles and aunties and their grandparents, who may tell them, oh, you know, I know a story just like that, so let's sit down and let me tell it to you.
Hope doesn't know if Nuna and Fox will go on any more adventures, but he says with the title Fox Tales, there's a possibility for more. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, Marsha Lynn in Valdez, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Shady Grove Oliver in Homer, and Lisa Fu in Juneau. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.